The day was February 12, 1554. Jane felt as cold as the outside air as she sat in the Tower of London awaiting her execution, fully ready to become a Protestant martyr. My name is Elizabeth, and you're listening to Tea on History, a podcast about the people of history you've either forgotten about or never even learned about. Today, we'll be talking about Lady Jane Grey, the Queen of 9 Days. If you listened to my Elizabeth Woodville episode, then you would remember that Elizabeth Woodville was married before she married the king, and she had 2 children with the last name of Grey. That is the same Grey family that our Jane Grey comes from. However, the maternal line of Jane Grey's family is also related to Elizabeth Woodville. This is through her mother, who was named Frances. Frances's mother was named Mary, and she was the sister of King Henry VIII. You may have heard of him. We will talk about him a bit in this episode because a lot of what Henry VIII does sets up the fate of Jane Grey. So a little more background on Jane's mother, Frances. Frances's mother was Mary. We're just going to call her Princess Mary because there's another Mary later on that we're going to talk about, and we'll give her a different name, but Princess Mary was the sister of Henry VIII, which means that she was the daughter of Henry VII and Elizabeth of York, who we talked about in the last episode. What happens is when Henry VIII is king, his sister, Princess Mary, is married off to the French king, but he dies pretty quickly, and so Mary ends up going off with Henry VIII's BFF named Charles. Charles and Mary get married, and this really, really angers Henry VIII. He's like, that's my best friend and that's my sister. Like, no, they did it in secret. They didn't ask him for permission. He was not happy about it. And Mary actually, she puts herself down in rank because she's a princess, so she outranks Charles, even though he was a duke, which, you know, is pretty cool. He's not a prince, he's not a king. They have a child named Frances. Frances is the mother of Jane Grey. All of Henry VIII's children are her cousins. We're going to talk about Henry VIII's children throughout this episode. Just know that Jane is their cousin. And yes, this means that Jane's parents were related. Inbreeding and incest was something that was fairly normalized, especially in royal families, because royal families wanted to keep the bloodline pure. Think like if you watch Game of Thrones, the Targaryens, how they keep their bloodline pure. It's very similar, and George R.R. Martin probably got his inspiration from actual royal families in real life and history that were known for inbreeding. And things happened because of that. For example, the Habsburgs are probably one of the most famous families known for inbreeding, and they actually developed a physical malformation called the Habsburg jaw, and eventually this really catches up to them. It's very reminiscent of Game of Thrones. Jane's parents, they were related. However, they are pretty distantly related, so, you know, ew, but also like, okay, whatever, moving along. As for Jane, though, this really has nothing to do with her story because she was not physically malformed. She was normal. But I thought I would bring it up now just so you know that inbreeding is a thing. Now let me set the scene a little bit for you guys. We are in the 1500s and Henry VIII is king. He has 2 daughters, a girl named Mary Tudor, another girl named Elizabeth Tudor, and a boy named Edward. His first daughter, Mary, is the daughter of his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. His second daughter, Elizabeth, is the daughter of his second wife, Anne Boleyn. Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn are going to play some pretty significant parts in setting up the scene here. His third child, Edward, is his coveted son that he finally got from his third wife, Jane Seymour. Now, spoiler alert, Jane Seymour dies pretty quickly after childbirth, and he gets married again. In all, Henry VIII has 6 wives, but we're not going to talk about all of them. We're just going to focus on Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn. Picture this. England is a Catholic country. They are loyal to the Catholic Church, which is run by the Pope in Rome. Henry VIII, he is married to his Catholic wife, Catherine of Aragon. She's queen, everyone loves her, she's super popular, but she's only given him a daughter, not a son. And Henry VIII is obsessed with having a son, which most kings were, but there's something about Henry VIII's story that just really screams obsession when it came to having a male heir. So Catherine hasn't given him any sons, and he meets the beautiful Anne Boleyn, and he's completely enamored by her. He decides, you know what, I actually want to marry Anne now. After 24 years married to Catherine, he says, you know, I want to get a divorce. The thing is, Anne Boleyn is a Protestant. So not only is the Catholic Church supposed to be against divorce, but the Pope does not want a Protestant to be Queen of England. He's BFFs with Catherine, she's a hardcore Catholic, he wants Catherine to stay Queen. So Henry VIII is like, hey Pope, can I have a divorce? And the Pope is like, nah. And Henry VIII is like, but please? And the Pope is like, nah. And so Henry VIII decides to take matters into his own hands. He basically gets it in his mind that he no longer can be a part of the Catholic Church because he wants a divorce and what he wants, he gets. And so he decides to break up with the Pope, basically. He breaks with the Catholic Church and he decides to create a new church, which is called the Church of England. And he makes himself the head of this church. So he gives himself a divorce from Catherine of Aragon and marries Anne Boleyn. Henry VIII changing the religion from Catholic to Protestant really sparked this rivalry and this hatred and battle between the Catholics and the Protestants in England. And this is really the huge bit of background info that you need for Jane Grey, because this motivates her hugely throughout this story. Jane Grey, fun fact about her, is that she is Protestant AF. Jane Grey is all about that Protestant life, and being Protestant and being loyal to the Protestant religion is really what fuels her actions throughout this story. The other people who are Protestant in this story are Elizabeth Tudor, Henry's second daughter, and his son Edward. So all three of them, Jane, Elizabeth, and Edward, they are all on the Protestant side. However, Mary Tudor, Henry's first daughter, she is very, very Catholic, just like her mother. And so remember whose side everybody is on, even though they're all kind of on their own side when it comes down to it. What religion they are part of plays a pretty significant role in this story. I'm gonna kind of go back to Jane now and talk a little bit about her childhood and other things about her other than her religion. So Jane's parents, in short, they suck. They are really not the greatest parents. Not only because there was an account in which Jane tells someone that her parents beat her and abuse her. If they were abusing her and beating her, unfortunately it wasn't. If they weren't treating her well, it was probably in line with the type of behavior that was seen during that time period. So that's not why I say she had bad parents. They used her to get what they wanted. They used her for power. And this is because Jane's family, as we talked about, were distantly royal. They are what I've seen be called royal adjacent, meaning they were this family that had royal ties and ancestry, but they weren't directly in line for the throne. And so Jane sort of has a claim, but like not really. And her parents wanted to get in on that. And so her education is actually pretty impressive. Jane herself was pretty impressive. She had a very good education, especially in languages. She knew French, Greek, Italian, Latin, and of course, English. She was fluent in all of these languages. And this is one that definitely was pushed because her parents wanted her to be a queen. And knowing a lot of languages comes in clutch when you are a queen. You can converse with ambassadors and foreign kings and queens from other kingdoms. So knowing languages would have been something that a queen would need to know. All that being said, Jane was also just really, really smart. She was what they'd call a prodigy, basically. She was very, very book smart and she just excelled at everything she did. So she was like a Hermione Granger of her time. That's the best comparison I can make. So I'd say three of the things to know about Jane is that she's really, really smart, really, really Protestant, and she had parents that really, really didn't have her best interest at heart. They had their best interest at heart, and they used her to get there. However, Jane does have some autonomy in her story. She's not completely just a pawn the entire time. She does make at least a couple really big decisions, and we're gonna talk about that. So back to Henry VIII. He's king, he's going through wives pretty quickly. And the thing to know about him is that even though he changed the country to a Protestant religion, he only really did that so that he could give himself a divorce. Because he's King Henry VIII and what he wants, he gets, at whatever cost. You may be able to tell from my tone of voice, but over on Tea on History, we're really not big Henry VIII fans. I don't think anybody is really a big fan of Henry VIII. He didn't actually necessarily believe that heartily in Protestant values. He was still pretty much at his core, pretty Catholic. He wasn't really that Protestant in his heart. Whereas Elizabeth, his child, and Edward, his other child, and Jane Grey were very Protestant. And so that means that when Henry VIII dies and little baby Edward takes the throne, things are going to get a little more Protestant. Edward is going to be a little bit more gung-ho for Protestantism. And even though Henry was all about his son, you know, that was the light of his life, son of the world, he made sure that before he died, that his two daughters, Mary and Elizabeth, were put back into the line of succession. This is kind of a big deal because when he divorced Mary's mother, Catherine, and he beheaded Elizabeth's mother, Anne Boleyn, Elizabeth and Mary were taken out of the line of succession and were considered bastards. They were no longer princesses and they were no longer in line for the throne. However, before Henry VIII dies, I guess he decided to be a decent dad for like a hot second, and he put Mary and Elizabeth back into the line of succession, meaning the line of succession would go Edward, Mary, Elizabeth. So Edward, he had his two half-sisters as his heirs, but only one of them was Protestant, and Mary was ahead of the Protestant sister. So Mary comes first, then Elizabeth. And this becomes a bit of a problem for Edward later on. But before we fast forward to that, let's talk a little bit about Edward and his reign and Jane. So Edward is king now. Henry VIII's kicked the bucket. He's done. No more wives. He's dead. And Edward becomes king. The little baby Edward is only 9 years old, and he can't rule a kingdom on his own, which you might remember from the Elizabeth Woodville episode was the same problem. But this time, Edward, he does become king, and he has what would be known as a regent, or in the Elizabeth Woodville episode, it was called a Lord Protector. So this is just a person that rules for the little baby king until he's old enough to be a big king. His first regent was named Edward Seymour, but I want to talk about his brother, Thomas Seymour. Now, Jane actually lived with Thomas Seymour and his wife for a bit of time. Fun fact, his wife was Catherine Parr, who was the final wife of Henry VIII. She outlived him. Lucky her. Jane Grey lives with them for a little bit, and at some point, they actually think about marrying little baby Edward to little Jane Grey. Now, Jane Grey and Edward were around the same age, so this was a pretty good match, other than that they were cousins, but anyway. This seemed like a pretty good plan. Jane Grey's parents, of course, were gung-ho for this because they wanted Jane to be queen. They're like, queen, queen, queen. But Thomas Seymour goes kind of crazy. He kind of loses his marbles. He tries to kidnap little baby Edward. He kills Edward's dog. This does not work out for him. He gets beheaded for this, and Edward has to get a new regent. That new regent is named John Dudley. Now, at some point around this time, Edward starts to get sick. The thing about this is that Edward, at least from what I've read a little bit, he was pretty sickly. He got sick a lot, it seemed, throughout his life, and most historians believe he might have died from tuberculosis. There's also a theory that he died from a tumor, but in all, little baby Edward, he was sick a lot throughout his life. When he gets this final illness, things are just taking a bit of a dive, and it's just kind of obvious that he's probably going to die, and they need to get things in order for the line of succession, meaning Edward has time before he dies so he can kind of plan with his regent and his advisors who he wants to be next in line. It's at this point that Jane's parents come to her and are like, hey Jane, we're marrying you off. And the person that Jane marries is named Guilford Dudley. Guilford is an interesting name. Glad it's not the same names that we've been talking about. It's a little unique. But Guilford Dudley was the son of none other than the regent, John Dudley. It was not a coincidence that Jane was being married off to this rando named Guilford. Everybody is just scheming, scheming, and more scheming. And Jane Grey is the ultimate pawn in this scheme. They want her on the throne. Obviously, John Dudley wants a piece of that. He wants to retain his power somehow. And the key to that was Guilford. All of these people are really scheming, and they're using Jane as the ultimate pawn for this. Jane is told, hey, Jane, you're gonna marry Guilford. And she's like, who? What? I mean, she just has to do it because that's the way it works in history. But you might be wondering why everybody wanted Jane Grey on the throne. Edward was Protestant, and that's why I think he was agreeing with all of this. He was very Protestant, and he wanted the country to stay Protestant. So let's go back to when we talked about the line of succession, because that is basically what they are redoing and coming up with their own new line of succession. So Edward's two half-sisters, which I don't think I've really mentioned, and if you don't know the history, Elizabeth Tudor, the one I've been talking about, she is the future Queen Elizabeth I. I'll just leave you with that tidbit. We won't go much more into that. Edward has his two half-sisters, Mary and Elizabeth. However, Mary is a Catholic, and she is ahead of Elizabeth in the line of succession because she's older. Mary is very Catholic, and Edward does not want Mary to be queen because he doesn't want the country to go back to being Catholic, and he's pretty sure that's exactly what Mary will do. Now, all of that being said, this makes it seem like, on paper, that Edward hated his sisters or he didn't care about them, and I don't think that's true. But he was also trying to make what he thought was the right decision for the country. He didn't want the country going back to being Catholic. And it's that simple for him. He probably wanted his sister Elizabeth to be queen, the future Queen Elizabeth I, because she was Protestant. But Elizabeth was younger than Mary. She was the second born, which meant she did not go in front of Mary in the line of succession. And the only way that Edward could take Mary out of the line of succession was on the grounds of her being a bastard, which is what she originally was until Henry put her back in the line. And if he does that to one sister, he has to do it to the other one too. That knocks out Mary and it knocks out Elizabeth, even though I think Edward probably would have preferred Elizabeth. The other thing to remember here, and definitely to remember this going forward, is that Mary was popular. She was Princess Mary in the eyes of the people. Her mother, Catherine of Aragon, was a very popular queen who got basically cast aside for Anne Boleyn. Now, I'm a huge Anne Boleyn fan, but that's the truth of it. And in the eyes of the English people, their beloved Queen Catherine got thrown aside for Anne Boleyn. So even if he had gone the Elizabeth route, there's a very good chance that Elizabeth may not have been able to pull off being queen just yet, because Mary had the support of the general English people. The general population loved her. And this was the part that was a little bit confusing to me, and I kind of tried to look into it a little bit. What confused me was, why would Protestants have supported her? And I don't know if they necessarily did wholeheartedly, but she had enough support from the general public that, I mean, she becomes queen because of it. If Mary was a politician running on a platform, I think it would have been a platform of, hey, I don't like Protestantism, but it's cool, it's fine, you can do that. She ends up getting the nickname of Bloody Mary, and this is because she has a reign of terror down on the Protestants. Mary did not start off by saying, like, down with Protestants, I'm gonna kill all of you. She was a bit more tolerant at the beginning, even though she doesn't retain that. My point is, Mary was really, really popular, and that is a big reason why she ends up gaining so much support and why Edward's plan falls apart. And Jane ultimately is the one who pays for it. So Edward is like, okay, both of my half-sisters are out, Jane Grey is in. Fast forward to Edward dying. He finally dies, and Jane is called to court. They're like, hey Jane, Edward's dead, and she's like, oh, okay. She probably was sad. She grew up with him, they were friends, they were both Protestants, so she's probably sad. And then they follow that up with, but guess what? You're queen. And Jane is basically like, no thank you, I'm good. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm good. Hard pass. Everybody's like, but wait, if you don't become queen, then guess who's going to become queen? Mary Tudor. And she's a Catholic. And Jane's like, oh my gosh, not a Catholic. She is realizing that if she doesn't become queen, Mary Tudor's going to become queen. And that would mean that England goes back to being Catholic. And that is the opposite of what Jane wants. She is hardcore Protestant. When I said that being Protestant was what was going to drive her throughout the story, I meant it. So Jane ends up accepting that she will become the next queen. She basically takes on this burden of being the next Protestant queen to essentially save England from going back into the dark ages of Catholicism. She's like a YA dystopian novel heroine. She definitely is taking on this burden because she really feels like this is her duty, like this is more than life and death, that this is what she has to do for the good of the country. This is probably a good time for me to point out that she was around 15 or 16 years old. Her age, from the research I've done, varies. There are some sources that say she was 15, some 16, some 17. She was young though, okay? She was really young. She was taking on a burden for an entire country. That gives you a pretty good idea of the type of person Jane Grey was. She was dutiful, just ride or die for her religion, and keep that in mind as we continue the story. Meanwhile, Mary Tudor was off somewhere else in England, far from court. She'd been invited to come and say goodbye to Edward because, well, he was dying and he's her brother. She decided not to do that because she was like, that might be a trap. Mary Tudor isn't stupid. She knows that they're gonna be coming for her. She gets word that Edward is dead, probably says a prayer. I'm sure she's sad. But then she's like, all right, let's go get my crown. Because she was getting that crown and she did not care who or what was going to stand in her way. We can kind of fast forward a bit, not to jump over any sequence of events, but really there's not much to it. As I explained, Mary Tudor had a lot more support. She was the beloved Princess Mary Tudor. She had support. And the Privy Council, who I'm not going to really get into, they're just the powers that be, they were realizing very quickly that they made a mistake. Mary went off and she got herself an army, and the Privy Council was seeing the general public rally behind Mary. They announced that Jane Grey is going to be your new queen. The crowd was like, who? Who's that? Where's Mary? Where's Princess Mary? So the Privy Council was like, oh no, I think we miscalculated here. Jane Grey is called the Queen of 9 days for a reason. She's only queen for 9 days. That's not a long reign, and she's never officially crowned. So it takes 9 days for the Privy Council to realize they've made a big mistake, and they're basically like, takesy-backsies, Jane, you're no longer queen. Welcome to your new home, the Tower of London. Mary, you're queen. Welcome to your throne. At this point, I think Jane was probably pretty upset, not only because she got thrown into the Tower of London, but she had embraced it almost like a destiny. Like, I think she was behind this idea of her being queen now, as long as she would be this Protestant queen that would make sure England was good and not Catholic. Jane Grey and Guildford, him too, he got dragged into this. He was just along for the ride. He and her both get thrown in the Tower of London, and Mary Tudor becomes Queen of England. She's known as Mary the First of England. As I said, Mary didn't get on the throne and she wasn't immediately like, kill all Protestants. She was pretty sort of tolerant at the beginning. From what I've read, she had a council that had Protestants and Catholics on it, but then she decided she wanted to marry Philip from Spain. And the Protestants in England were like, what? Spain? I don't think so. Because Spain was a very Catholic country. They were like the hub of Catholicism, other than Rome. But Mary wanting to marry Philip did not bode well for the Protestants in England, because Spain was going to make sure that there was a reign of terror down on those Protestants. Mary's queen, and Jane Grey is chilling in her new home at the Tower of London, but she's not executed. Mary does not actually want to execute her cousin. I think, for one, she didn't want to martyr Jane Grey, spoiler alert, but also I think she genuinely didn't want to kill her cousin. From what I've read, actually, Frances, Jane's mother, was really close with Mary. She was a human being, so I think she loved Jane Grey to an extent. She was her family, and even though they were all fighting for the throne and on opposite sides of this religious battle, they were still human beings with hearts. Jane Grey and Mary, they didn't hate each other, they just were on opposite sides of this whole entire thing. My point is, Mary didn't want to kill Jane Grey. So Jane Grey was allowed to live for a while, like 9 months. Mary, when she decides she wants to marry Philip from Spain, some of the Protestants in England, long story short, they stage a rebellion called Wyatt's Rebellion. It gets nipped in the bud pretty quickly, and Mary at this point realizes that Jane can't be alive anymore. As long as Jane is alive, she is a figurehead and a sign of hope and power for the Protestants that Mary is really trying to crush and suppress. Slowly, but that is eventually her goal. And Jane, she's a figurehead of Protestantism. And as long as she is alive, there is going to be a constant threat against Mary's rule. Let me just say, Jane isn't the only threat here. Elizabeth, Mary's half-sister, is also a threat. Eventually, at one point, Mary imprisons Elizabeth for the same reason, because Elizabeth is a Protestant figurehead. However, at this point, Jane is the main figurehead because she was the queen for 9 days and she is a Protestant. Mary at this point decides Jane has to die. And Guildford, he has to die too. Poor Guildford, he really, I mean, I haven't heard like great things about Guildford, but his name's Guildford and he gets pulled into something that he didn't necessarily need to be pulled into. He was also kind of a pawn here. There aren't many stories about him because he's kind of irrelevant, but still, that's kind of sad. Now, Mary still was kind of begrudging about executing Jane Grey. She was like, what could I do to fix this without killing her? You know what? I'll just convert Jane to Catholicism. She has someone go to Jane Grey and say, you know, you can live, but you have to convert to Catholicism. And I imagine Jane Grey kind of looked at them, laughed, and was like, nah, not happening. But really, Jane Grey was like, no, I'm not converting to Catholicism. When I said that Jane Grey was really fueled and motivated by being a Protestant, I meant it. And I also meant that she did have some autonomy in some of her choices. She chooses to die. Jane would rather martyr herself as a Protestant than convert to Catholicism and live. For her, this was bigger than life and death. And that's definitely in line with the time period. Although we have people today in modern times that are religious, back in this time period, people really lived and breathed for their religion. And Jane Grey deciding to die as a martyr rather than live as a Catholic says a lot about the time period, but it also says a lot about Jane. You could sit here and say that she was ridiculous for doing that, that you wouldn't do that, and have to say I probably don't think there's anything I would martyr myself for. However, I respect Jane for it because that just says a lot about her personality. She was committed. Wanting to die as a martyr for your cause is admirable. So cheers to Jane Grey. And actually, one of the first things I wrote in my notes about Jane Grey is that she has a martyr complex, which she does. And that's the thing. She wasn't just like, I would rather die. She definitely would have rather died, but she knew that she could go out as a martyr. She wanted to martyr herself because she realized that's really all she had left that she could do. And so on February 12th, 1554, Jane Grey and Guildford were executed at the Tower of London. They were both beheaded, and there's actually a very famous painting depicting this. It's not necessarily that historically accurate, but it's a very emotional painting. I'll post it on Instagram. If you want to kind of get a feel for Jane and what she would have been feeling, martyring herself, but also being a 16-year-old girl about to die, I think that painting is a pretty good depiction of those emotions. And the story goes that she was very composed, she gave a speech, she was, you know, ready to die, and then she was blindfolded and couldn't find the block to rest her head on, and she freaked out, which, fair, I'd freak out too. I'd be freaking out before that point, honestly, but she loses her composure because she can't see anything and she knows she's about to die, and she's a teenager who's about to die for a cause much bigger than her. I think she also was hoping for maybe a pardon or something, but she was also ready to martyr herself at the same time. Jane Grey was beheaded at the Tower of London, and that is also where she is laid to rest. So pour one out for Jane Grey, the Queen of 9 Days. And you know what? If you're feeling really generous, pour one out for Guildford too. He kind of got pulled along for the ride, and that ride ended in a beheading. So pour one out. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. You can follow Tea on History over on Instagram, or you can support Tea on History over on Anchor. If there's anybody you guys want to hear about, let me know, send me a message. And until next time, cheers to Lady Jane Grey.